Hello, everybody. This is February 2nd, or 22nd, 2021, and this is episode 173 of Transmission.
Yeah, and so we're back after our regrouping week.
Yep.
There are a lot of twos in today's date.
Yeah, I was looking at that little number on the bottom of my screen.
2/22/2021.
I wish it was 2022, because one, it'd be better, like in terms of numeric kind of rhythm there, but then also the pandemic might be done by then.
Yeah,
I don't know for sure though.
So 2/22/2022, that'll be quite a
201 years from now.
Yeah,
I think we'll still be going strong.
Yeah, it'll be episode like 10,000 or something.
We'll be in our Elon Musk built Android bodies.
We might be on Mars.
It's true.
No.
The future. today we're going to talk a little bit about future stuff, like where things are headed, but I think most of the episode today will be talking a little bit more about history.
Yes.
Probably.
Yeah, and so the new format here that we're trying out is we're going to be broadcasting mostly on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, although this week it'll just be Monday and Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And we're going to try to have weekly topics, and we'll see. You know, maybe we'll completely kill the whole thing by doing this.
The rage of our listeners will spill over and destroy everything.
but maybe it'll be good. And so today and this week we want to look at this issue of evangelicalism. Obviously, that's been a big deal in America these last number of years, and
last couple, you know, particularly,
yeah, but particularly, I would say, in some ways, it's I don't know, sort of accelerating in terms of being on the news, being solely identified with a particular political slant, et cetera, so it just seemed like a good thing to talk about.
Sure.
And I thought it would be fun, just because my mind often goes in this direction, to actually say, like, what does this word mean? You know, I think it's kind of an unfortunate thing that this term was translated into English just as an alliteration. Right, so the Greek word, so it's a Greek word, evangelion or evangelia, and it was just translated as gospel, which is just sort of what it sounds like in Greek. And the problem with that to me is that that word doesn't mean anything in English, right? I mean, it's just a made-up word. And so then that sort of got translated, or I guess the closest translation we had, right, was this good news. Mm-hmm. But mostly it was just kind of gospel, and then evangelicalism, which was even more of a just transliteration of the Greek. And so it's even hard to say what we're talking about sometime. But the, you know, originally this term was actually used in a really interesting way, I thought, when I studied Greek and found this out, was that one of the best translations of this term is as a war report. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when a battle was going on somewhere, a war was going on somewhere, of course, they didn't, you know, have the internet or Fox News or telephones or whatever. And so, you know, the ruler had to find out, like, what was going on out on the battlefield if they weren't there, or the people who were back at home had to find out what was going on. And so, you know, they would write these evangelions, and they'd give it to one of these messengers. Mm-hmm. Who would bring it back home. Right? So it was kind of this report about the struggle, you know, what is going on with the struggle? And obviously, if, you know, the home team was winning, then that was kind of this good news, like you were getting good news that the battle was going well. And so when these were written, and, you know, there were hundreds of them written, we only are mostly familiar with four, but there were hundreds of them written. The idea was that all these different communities around the Mediterranean were trying to report on what was happening in this kind of cosmic or theological or religious struggle, right? So that's originally what this all started out as. And of course, now it's a whole different set of things.
Yeah, and there's so much irony in it because a lot of Christian language that we now take of as kind of vaguely theological was them shoplifting imperial language and subverting it, right? So it's just like, battle? Well, the battle belongs to the Lord, and it's the battle not against flesh and blood, but against the principalities and powers. Like, if they just started using this language as a subversive tactic. Now, and then, you know, once Christendom really starts to firm up, you don't hear this language as much anymore. What you start hearing it again, and the first time we see the word evangelical used as a movement word was with Protestantism, because Protestant Reformation was about reclaiming the gospel as they understood it, and so evangelical was pretty much synonymous with being Protestant. That's why we have the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America. They're not particularly evangelical in the way that we think about it today. They're evangelical in the sense that they're Protestant. But then, you know, like all good things, once it comes to America, it turns into something wonderful and strange.
And so the but even before that, I mean, and before the word was used popularly, right, this notion of you know, making converts, right? This idea of you know, going to the ends of the world, and every knee shall bow and bend to Jesus, and you know, these kinds of things in scripture take on this super imperial tone. And so what starts to happen is that sharing the good news becomes synonymous with you better believe or we're going to kill you. Which it's hard to quite get that that's good news, but
Yes, and you know, it becomes very toxic. There's a lot of history to this that we don't have time to really get into. And so I'm going to plug my book, Unkingdom. The first chapter, I talk a lot about these shifts. And it really does become evangelicalism as a movement really has its origins in the colonial project. And it's not like evangelicals invented colonialism, far from it. I mean, within the Western Christian tradition, we can really look at a series of papal bulls that kind of were tied in with all that Columbus crap that we, you know, occupies our popular imagination. And that was driven by religious and militaristic and economic, all these sorts of things were fueling a lot of that. And so it became intertwined. And so within US history, this sort of colonial evangelistic fervor is part of the DNA of what we think of as the United States of America from its beginning. And so you have throughout, if you talk to evangelicals, so I don't know if I don't think I'm an evangelical anymore, but I don't care. The way I was formed in my later teens and in my early 20s, going to evangelical institutions, we would talk about Christianity becoming corrupt and needing to be cleansed through revivals. So there's these series of revivals that evangelicals, if they study history, point back to the First Great Awakening, which was happened in the United States and the UK. And then there's a Second Great Awakening. And then there's a series of other revivals. And so the idea is it's this continuing this trend of the Protestant Reformation of reclaiming what is core. And so for American evangelicals today, that is often tied up in this whole fundamentalist project of reclaiming what the fundamentals are of Christianity over and against people who are impure and do not hold to those fundamentals. And that these fundamentals are so important that we need to go to the end of the earth and share them with people, because if we don't, they're going to go to hell forever. And so, Sure, colonization happens, which is a bummer, but they get to go to heaven when they die, so It kind of works out in the end.
That's cool. Yeah. And so that's the other piece. So you've got the external colonialism that evangelicalism gets connected with, but then you also have this internal colonialism, which has to do with, once Christianity becomes predominantly about what happens after you die, mm-hmm. you're going to all these bizarre extremes and sort of twisted logic to basically say, whatever happens to these people in the present, it's kind of okay because, eternity in heaven is, worth a few bad years on earth, right? Yeah. Which, again, if that's your understanding of what is good news, that can then inspire all kinds of horrific behavior in the present. Because you can always just say, well, whatever bad thing is going on now, it doesn't, it pales compared to eternity.
Mm-hmm. Couple comments coming in. And though our format has changed, we're still comment driven. So don't be shy.
We're desperate for your comments.
We need them. Julia writes, my formative life in the Phillips neighborhood in South Minneapolis saw copious numbers of evangelicals coming in to save us from ourselves. I experienced this as a form of violence. Just for some context, Dan and I are both in South Minneapolis. That's where we live. And my wife, Amy, was born in South Minneapolis. Her parents, she grew up the first 4 years of her life here. And so this is kind of as much of a home as anything could be my home, really. And throughout my entire life, since the 70s, when there was a lot of violence, this was kind of the violent center of the Twin Cities, there have been waves of evangelical missionaries coming in. In fact, on my block, there are at least five households on my block that are all from one church, Bethlehem Baptist Church, which is John Piper's church. And that's part of much their whole mission is trying to save South Minneapolis. And so this is an example of like this bigger colonial project kind of at a more domestic level. It's still the same mm-hmm. impulse. And this is just speaking anthropologically, it's fascinating. You get these people like, so when I was an evangelical, what was in it for me? Why was I so excited by this idea of moving into a urban neighborhood and saving people? There's a lot of stuff going on. Like one, everyone wants to feel like they're a hero. And evangelicalism gives you your own custom-made hero story. You get to be a warrior for God, fighting against evil. It's like a superhero for Jesus. Plus, you get to feel special because you have a secret knowledge that no one else has. And when you meet someone else who has a secret knowledge, it's like, it's like drawing the half the fish symbol in the sand. And if they complete it, then they know, you're one. Each other. And so to the point that you don't even trust that other people who say they're Christian really are unless they can pass your test. Right.
Yeah. Well, and that's a very fascinating part of this in terms of the American scene, right, mm-hmm. and development. And of course, this worldwide too. And this also comes out of the Reformation, right, is that you get this idea that that different Christians aren't Christians, mm-hmm. yeah. right? And so that, so when we moved to Crookston, I mean, we had this hilarious experience of people talking about how there were all these different religions in Crookston. And at first, I didn't know what the hell people were talking about because I was like, everybody pretty much is Christian here. Like there are probably a few people that aren't, but And then I realized that they were talking about like Lutherans and Catholics and Presbyterians as different religions. Right? And so it becomes just another way of being tribal, mm-hmm. right? Where you then say that, I mean, I've just got some hilarious stories about these interscene different splits, you know, in different Christian church denominations and everything. And, you know, can you use instruments or non-instrumental groups or, you know, all this stuff. And so then as soon as you are on the outside, you are no longer saved, right? I.e., you're now going to hell. And so then, yeah, so then this becomes a rallying cry of how many other people can I get saved?
That's right.
And it is very violent. I mean, Julia, you're right. It is very violent. And this is where, you know, the imperial colonial piece comes in, because it's violent in the same way that imperialism and colonialism is violent, right? Is that you're just taking people over and exercising power over them.
Yeah, and I mean, I've led hundreds of people to Jesus as their personal Lord and Savior, and if you would have told me during that time I was being violent, I would have been shocked. But this idea of saying, don't believe this, God's going to send you to hell for forever, so trust my good news, to just something really abusive about that. But I was a perpetrator of that a lot, and even there's a plus. There's an add-on pack. You know, if you buy a video game, sometimes you need new content, you buy the add-on pack for the video game. The add-on pack for evangelicalism is the charismatic movement. And so as a charismatic, I would go around saying, these other Christians may be saved, but they're not spirit-filled, because there's like the second blessing.
Yeah, and so it's a way of either super saved.
I'm a super Christian. Right? Now,
all right, let's go to the comments. We're getting comments now, yeah.
Kathleen writes, "Onward, Christian soldiers." That's a classic nugget of a hymn. Mm-hmm. "A report on how the war against Satan is going."
Right.
What a bet. It's some of these hymns are so poorly written to begin with, but that one is just really, we'd sing it in church, and it was very cringe, as my son would say. Julia likes this idea of custom-made hero story. And it's how it functions. It's part of the appeal, and that's not all bad, by the way. Wanting to be, have significance in your life is good. That's such a bad thing. It's depending on how self-delusional you are about it, and how much harm you're inflicting on people. Piper writes, "Were evangelicals political before the rise of the Christian right?" That's a good question.
I would say a couple things about this. First of all, evangelicalism is not monolithic, mm-hmm. right? So you definitely have a number of church traditions that would consider themselves evangelical, that actually are very intentional about not being political. Right. And say that we are not of this world. We are of a different world. And so they are explicitly sort of anti-political. And then the other thing, I think, is that as America has become a more pluralistic society, a lot of evangelicals who were very political in the sense that they were just very involved with society, right? They could kind of assume that America was Christian. And I think a lot of the recent politicization of the right-wing church has to do with the fact that America is becoming increasingly pluralistic. Evangelicals have always been concerned, or certain group of them have always been concerned about society and social matters.
Yeah, and you do see a shift with the rise of the Christian right, mm-hmm. the Southern strategy, things like the war on drugs, different kinds of moral issues becoming locked in step with all sorts of imperial causes. And so that None of that was entirely new, but it was solidified, and you wouldn't really see evangelicalism as a political movement group the same way.
No.
And so everything has gotten worse because of that. I mean, a good example of this is like Jimmy Carter was the first president who would gush about being born again, but he was not a right winger, at least within the American context. And so you saw within that short period of time, the shift really happened. Before that, it was strange for like you had a whole bunch of Protestant presidents that would never have claimed to be evangelical. It wasn't that important to do that. It right. became important again. And to me, evangelicalism, you could make the case that evangelicalism is to Protestantism what fascism is to conservatism. This reactionary movement to shore up the base and hold on to the center through the use of violence.
And so Patricia says,
this might be more depressing than the pandemic, guys. It is. Because the pandemic's going to go away, hopefully. We have reason to hope that the pandemic may go away, but we have no reason to hope that evangelicalism will go away.
Yeah. So, although that's going to be next week. We're going to be talking about the endemic pandemic.
Yeah.
So
that's right. Stefan writes, Jesus followers should make their own fire and brimstone evangelizing orgs, like repent from your devil-inspired homophobia and support, etc. There have been kind of attempts at this. And this is kind of like something I want to maybe talk more about tomorrow. Like, what is Wednesday. It within even... Or, yeah, Wednesday, sorry. What is it about evangelicalism that... Are there good insights in there? And did evangelicalism... Does evangelicalism have to be this way?
Right.
Because part of the thing is, like, what we described about evangelicalism historically, and a little bit sociopolitically, it's just one sliver of what people think of. When you say evangelical, most people have in their mind things like low church, meaning that there's not a lot of strict liturgy. It's more spontaneous. Worship is more contemporary. That's what people think about first when you see evangelical, and then there's moral issues that go with it. But some of those pieces, it's not like everything about evangelicalism as it's understood in the United States, particularly when you start talking about the fact that most evangelicals in the world aren't white, there's lots that could be good in there. So it's worth talking about how not just to treat evangelicalism as a giant scapegoat for all of Christendom's sins.
let's keep on with the comments.
Brian writes, given that it is a false stereotype that Kierkegaard, or I was told that you're supposed to pronounce it Kierkegaard, but I refuse because it sounds so pretentious, was only concerned with individual existence. Do you agree with me that Kierkegaard's summary of Christianity as existence communication is one of the best short summaries ever given? You know, I don't know enough about Kierkegaard to really unpack what existence communication means. So you might have to unpack that a little bit for us.
Yeah.
So, unless you're well-versed in Kierkegaardian...
No, yeah, not enough to, yeah.
Viv writes, hi, I had to get in on this conversation as I made the decision to give up Journey, my favorite band of 34 years, in 2017. 45's longtime friend plus spiritual advisor Paula White Kane, the Prosperity Gospel megachurch pastor plus chairwoman of the Evangelical Advisory Board for 45, is married to Jonathan Kane. The guy is responsible for bringing the idea of Don't Stop Believing to Journey. What the hell? I didn't know. Jonathan's fully involved in Paula's ministry, even the ministry of music at our church. I had no idea that Journey had evangelical connections like that.
No,
it changes the meaning of Don't Stop Believing.
Yeah. Well, and I think one of the things that Viv is bringing up is something that, you know, we were talking about before we got going, and I think is worth thinking about, right, is this term at this point in time, particularly in the American context, irredeemable? And, you know, I think in a lot of ways it is irredeemable. We can talk about other ways of looking at it, but I do think that it's, you know, there is this kind of thing that happens with terms and the way that they get used in different socio-political arenas at different points in history, where it's just like, you know, you need something new. Like it's just it's just not going to cut it anymore. There's too much weight of kind of popular culture definition that you just can't overcome. And I'm okay with that.
It shows the challenge of like drifting language, because what if there's a group of Christians who's most willing to drop a label and take up a new one, it is evangelicals, because they're the if you're gonna go to if you look on YouTube and just do a search for I'm not a Christian, I'm a Christ follower, or any kind of catchphrase that shows a shifting of language about how one self-defines as a Christian. Nine times out of ten, it's an evangelical wrote it, because there's this idea that these labels are unimportant. It's because it's about the core of the gospel. And so that's what makes evangelicalism so powerful, is it's incredibly adaptable in ways that other Christian movements are not. So all that means is people that are out there saying, well, I'm not evangelical, I just follow Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. Like, there's a lot of deception that goes on with evangelicals acting like they're not evangelicals or pretending to not be evangelicals. Lisa writes, I'm imagining a comic book or strip. We're talking about like those evangelistic
The
tracts.
superheroes. Yeah, well, no, like the
Oh.
superhero, evangelical superhero.
Yep.
Yeah.
Gus writes, I also wonder how much this fuels the current capitalist system as well. Great connecting point. It gives people meaning in their lives compared to what the late great David Graeber called bullshit jobs. And once you're able to find meaning, you'll put up with more abuse at work. I think that's astute. There's all kinds of ways in which evangelicalism is tied into how capitalism functions. So much so that there are scholars who, it's a whole fascinating field of scholarship trying to decide when capitalism as we know it today really started. One of the schools of thought is that it is an economic variation of Christian revivalism, because the function of like so much so we see this connection that people who work for corporations trying to get the brand out there are called brand evangelists. So this language isn't just merely metaphoric. There's something baked into this idea of being salespeople for Jesus that really accelerates capitalist logic and vice versa. And also causes people to put up with crap because they're suffering for the Lord.
I mean, the views of suffering, the views of work, the views of value of a human being, the views of what is the purpose of this life versus the next life. I mean, all of these things and the way that they're talked about in evangelicalism fit very, very nicely with especially industrial capitalism. I mean, one of the things I was mentioning before we started was, we were just talking about how this is a formative thing above and beyond this particular word. And so even people who would not consider themselves to be evangelical Christians have been formed by a lot of these ideas, right? And one of them, this sort of fundamental worthlessness of the human person. And so, the way that you get your worth is by working hard and, being a good contributor to society and being kind of this cog in the machine. And so there are all these people who, if they even consider like taking some time off of their horrible job, if they can, or, shifting what they want to do, they have a panic attack and they don't even understand, like, why are they so distressed? And a lot of it is because they've adopted this particular formation where, if you're not working in the way that society tells you to work, you feel yourself as worthless. And that very much is connected to this particular strand of Christianity.
Adam writes, opiate of the masses. Gus later kind of nuances that. Adam, I think there's more to unpack in that statement. Pain relief from a depressing existence is something that isn't all bad thing, in my opinion. I mean, this is, I mean, just to not get too much into Marxism, Marx didn't mean it just as a slap to Christianity and religion. I think he recognized both that it dulls people's like misery, but also keeps them asleep. So there's kind of a benefit to it. But you're right. Like, so much about Christianity, the way we've understood it, particularly for those who don't see it as fundamentally liberatory in a political or economic way, is you have to put up with shit. And usually the shit you have to put up with is some sort of hierarchical system. So, you know, it's no accident that religion in general, but Christianity in particular, has been spread along with hierarchical arrangements because it helps justify it. You know, we all know the story probably at this point about why Christianity was introduced to enslaved people in the Americas to help them become more docile, not realizing that the seeds of revolution are in the gospel, in the Bible, as it's it's a messy book. I don't think it's all purely divinely inspired, but there's seeds of revolution in there. And so some of that bled through into Black Christianity, which is a wonderful gotcha on the ill attempts of white masters. Stephen writes, so by the way, to recommend a guy I disagree with a lot because he's a fundamentalist Baptist, check out a hugely informative, it says YouTube channel, but my brain thought it says white channel.
Right.
But it could go either way. On different denominations, both evangelical and liberal. It's called Ready to Harvest. Harvest analogies.
The harvest, yeah.
I don't know. Is this your rewriting of "Don't Stop Believing"? Is consider the implications and ramifications. Of
right.
How would you even sing that? Consider. Yeah. I could try to sing it, but
no.
All our viewership would drop off immediately.
Yes.
Adam writes, it's adaptable, sure, but it's also a way for evangelicals to separate themselves from what that term has come to mean in our society. For sure. Mm-hmm. This is kind of the adaptability of evangelicalism has some benefits. and one of the big benefits for the evangelicals is the ability to say, I'm not one of those not really true evangelicals. It's this perpetual one-upping and allowing yourself as an individual to opt out of any system, which is what makes evangelicalism like a hyper-religious form of Americanism. That same tendency in American culture, this becomes this echo chamber of reinforcement to where individuals can just take on any identity just as quickly as they can become a Mac person after being a PC person their whole life. Brian writes, to clarify about, thank you, existence communication, Kierkegaard meant that becoming Christian was receiving a Christ-like form of human existence. This meant that Christ was not merely to receive salvation to heaven, but to receive the life of Christ, who becomes the prototype for human existence. This seems to bypass evangelistic colonialism. I mean, this is fascinating. Like, I think there's, I always... I don't want to get into a big theological discussion, but I always have this love-hate relationship with any sort of Christianity being about a new way of being human. Because even though I agree, there's also then there's this assumption that people who aren't Christian are somehow less human. And that's part of the whole messy shitwad of how we got to this point. So it's murky, but I do agree that if a relationship with Jesus as a living, risen Lord means anything... in a positive sense. It has to be receiving a new way of understanding our relationship with the world, its people, creation, and God. And that it can't be, I received this message, therefore I'm going to the happy place. You did not, therefore you go to the bad place. So I'll agree as far as that goes.
So given that we're going to continue this on Wednesday, maybe we have to have a new relationship with our time and comments. And we can leave a couple hanging for next time.
Just to get at a couple here then.
Yeah.
Isaiah asks, will this be recorded and posted later? Currently working on something else. Yes, all these are available. Wherever these are being streamed now, it'll be available in the same place as a video. You can also go to the transmission page in particular and find it easily there. But it's also on the Center for Prophetic Imagination's website, which has links to the YouTube place for those things. It's also available as a podcast. Adam writes, so when I want escapism, I go to entertainment, not worldviews and spiritual beliefs, lol. Yeah, I think that's a little cynical way of talking about what religion is, but I agree that it shouldn't be escapism. You know, we talk about this all the time with spirituality being about leaning into reality rather than it being some sort of dissociation. And you're right. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you want to disassociate, it's way better to watch, binge watch Game of Thrones than it is to go to Bible studies. Like, for purely entertainment reasons, but also it probably doesn't screw you up as much as the Bible does if you're trying to use it as a way to escape. David writes, inside evangelicalism, there is still an earnest desire to find the redemptive core and be the champion of making that defining new label. So when I hear is it redemptive, I feel like only if it dies. So there may be a death resurrection story for the ashes of evangelicalism, but not a redemptive tinkering.
Yeah, and I think that would be a great thing to get into on Wednesday, right? So what are some of the alternatives and what is at issue here? Yeah, with, you know, this comment about Kierkegaard, this comment about redemption, transformation. I mean, there is this desire for change, right? There is this desire for justice. There is a desire for a better world. I mean, there are all those things. And I do think that all of that is an important aspect of what Jesus was talking about. And it's just gone down a lot of very problematic roads.
Last two comments real quick. Gus and then Catherine will have the last word. Gus writes, we should also mention that non-white evangelical churches are different in some ways than those dominated by us Mayo sapiens. It gets really complicated.
Yeah.
Yes. They're, yeah, thinking about evangelicalism and just having a mega church of white people in your head is, I don't think, is honest way of talking about evangelicalism as a whole.
Although there's also the reality that a lot of it has been exported to other places in very much the same form. So there's that problem too. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a both and.
Catherine writes, a very attractive promise of evangelicalism is that God will inspire, transform lives and society. And that is a beautiful idea. And I think sometimes it does some of that on an individual level, and even collectively in the case of some liberation church movements. But the irony is often it turns instead into an authoritarian trap. And I think that comment is a good way of anticipating what happens Wednesday. What do we do about that trap? What do we do with this evangelical thing? And what are the possibilities and ways of perverting it in a good way? Is it even possible, as David brings up? Shouldn't it just die? Or Daniel.
And David. And maybe. David.
Oh, yeah. David and you. You're Daniel and David commented on it.
Yes. Okay. All right. Well, thanks. Great to see and hear everybody. Mm-hmm. And we will be back on Wednesday.
See you Wednesday, everybody.
Bye.